Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Octopulse, our Detroit News, Detroit Red Wings podcast. I'm Mark Faulkner, Detroit News Assistant Sports Editor, joined by Ted Colfin, our Red Wings beat reporter. Coming up on the podcast, we'll hear from Washington Capitals color analyst Craig Lachlan. The Red Wings and Capitals are locked in that playoff battle, both teams with 82 points. And Ted, that's where we'll begin. The big pillow fight, as you called it in your story last week at DetroitNews.com, the underwhelming race, the Capitals with three straight wins and then three straight losses, including last night's 6-2 loss in Buffalo. The Red Wings losers of seven straight games since our last podcast, and then four straight losses before Monday's 4-2 win in Tampa. Seven games left for the Wings, eight games for the Caps. The Flyers are in the mix too with 83 points. They could get knocked out of third place by the Capitals in the Metropolitan Division, and then the Wings would have to finish ahead of the Flyers. And we haven't even mentioned the Islanders, who won again last night.
I'd be leery of the Islanders and the Penguins, Mark. I really think those two teams have some momentum here. And if I was all those teams, like the Flyers and the Red Wings and Washington, I'd be looking below them. I think Pittsburgh, obviously, we've talked about Pittsburgh off and on all year. With their Hall of Fame quartet, Hall of Fame nucleus there. And they actually seem to have the hot goaltender now in Alex Nedeljkovic, who Wings fans would be familiar with, obviously. And the Islanders, I mean, they're just the Islanders. They play tough playoff brand type of hockey. Just like those other teams, Mark, they haven't gained any traction whatsoever. And my dog agrees. It hasn't been very impressive, Mark, and I'm sure you would have to agree. Mm-hmm. These five teams just have not shown any sort of playoff caliber, I guess, playoff worthiness. Can you even imagine if we had a play-in tournament right now? I mean, what would be the reason? I mean, I don't know. Well, what's your feelings on that?
Well, you talked about the Penguins, Ted. Absolutely. They beat the Devils last night. They're in Washington tomorrow night.
Right.
So that could get even more complicated. But you're right. It's been like a pillow fight. I thought that was very appropriate. Underwhelming.
Underwhelming is a good word. I mean, I'm sure they all want that playoff spot, but are they truly worthy of it? I mean, I don't think all these teams have such obvious flaws, and it's just none of them have been playing particularly well. You want to go into the playoffs with some sort of momentum. None of these teams have had any sort of momentum. Other, maybe Pittsburgh can generate some here. Maybe the Wings can generate some here, Mark. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure we'll be talking about them here soon.
Speaking of the Wings, let's hear from Coach Derek Lalonde. Last Tuesday, Ted, you were in Washington, and you asked Lalonde about failing to protect that 2-1 lead in the third period, losing 4-3. On Dylan Strome's overtime goal. It was a normal post-game news conference until Lalonde publicly criticized Andrew Kopp for allowing the third goal. Here's your questions to Lalonde.
I mean, that could be good enough in your mind, I would think.
In reality, it's probably a good road point, but under the circumstances, you certainly want to get the two full points. Obviously, mixed emotions there, having a lead going into the third, and then finding a way to get it into overtime. I mean, we had our luck. We had the 2-on-1 at the net, obviously turned it over. In reality, probably a pretty good road point under the circumstances. Probably want a little bit more.
Start the third period. What do you think?
We turned the puck over. It's as simple as that. And then really just playing the third goal. Just a face-off, man-on-man. I don't know what our center was thinking. Just he lost it clean. Then he left the center. And that's the guy that banged it home. Like, that's That's minor hockey. That's hockey 101. That was hockey 15 years ago. That'll be hockey 15 years from now. Just really disappointed in that one.
And Ted, just some context to that post game. It was the latest, most important game of the season, the most important game in Steve Yzerman's 5-year rebuild. The Wings were 1 point behind the Capitals. They had that 2-1 lead after two periods. And that second period, one of the best periods of the season, they had 20 shots, two goals by Alex DeBrincat and David Perron. The goal by Perron, they showed Lalonde with a fist pump behind the bench, finally beating Charlie Lindgren. But then in the third, an early turnover by Moritz Seider, forced by TJ Oshie, forechecking along the right wing boards. And then that faceoff. And if you watch it closely, Andrew Kopp thought quickly about getting out to the point, then retreated, but his center counterpart, Strome, scored. And Ted, it's one thing to say we turned it over, like he said about the first goal, DeBrincat a turnover inside his own zone. And to DeBrincat's credit, he took blame for that goal when he was talking to Trevor Thompson in the intermission. But to pile on criticizing Kopp, I don't know what our center was thinking. That's minor hockey, hockey 101. That was hockey 15 years ago, and it'll be 15 years from now. What did you think about what he said? You included that quote in your story. You made it clear who he was talking about. Was it just something said in the heat of the moment?
Oh, I think it was, Mark. But let's face it, that was yesterday's breakfast. That was 3 days ago, 3 games ago.
That's history. I mean,
Florida and Tampa. I thought they played a good period in Carolina. I thought they played good hockey there at bits and stretches. But I was really impressed with Florida and Tampa. I thought those were two losses for sure that they had on the schedule. You'd have to mark them as L's, but I don't know. They hung tough with Florida for the most part. They got a point out of it. Nice comeback with Dylan Larkin coming back from being injured in the first period, coming back, scoring the game-tying goal late. And then Tampa, heck, Mark, I thought over 60 minutes, the better team got rewarded with the 2 points. So, yeah, I mean, the Washington game, that was, you know, I'm sure in the heat and the emotion, maybe, Derek, that was a very frustrating loss, but boy, that was a week ago. A lot has changed since then.
And to be fair, just one last note about Lalonde, who's been very insightful and engaging, maybe a bit conservative, of course, and reserved. There was an incident last year where he apologized sort of the next game. It was January 17th in Arizona. They lost 4-3 in a shootout. They had a 3-1 lead with 14 minutes to play. And Moritz Seider got caught in the offensive zone behind the Arizona net with a 3-1 lead, a two-goal lead, 14 minutes to play. Coyotes came down and scored on Magnus Hellberg. And after the game, Lalonde said, "We didn't get NHL-style goaltending." Now, Hellberg played 17 games. He was 4-8 with a 3.29 goals against average. But he came back the next game and sort of said, "Yeah, you know what? That probably wasn't the right thing to say," especially when there was a major mistake by Seider on the play. And if I'm in the dressing room, it's like, it really wasn't Hellberg's fault. So anyway, a little bit of context there, Ted, because it's a tough job. And Derek Lalonde in his second season, he has the team on the verge of making the playoffs, doesn't he?
No, yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, they've been fighting, scrapping, clawing. I mean, by all rights, they should be out of this race, but you know, they're still in it mainly because, yeah, none of the other teams are taking charge either. But no, I mean, I think this team's actually in really good shape these last 2 weeks with the schedule ahead of them and the fact that they might be gaining a little bit of traction.
Coming up on the podcast, we'll talk about Alex Lyon breaking his 10-game losing streak, and we'll break down the final 7 games of the season. But first, the interview. Today's special guest is Craig Laughlin. Joining us now is Craig Laughlin, the Washington Capitals color analyst with the Monumental Sports Network and a former NHL player for 8 years with the Caps, Habs, Leafs, and Kings. His first NHL goal was in the 1981-82 season at the old Montreal Forum with assists to a pair of Hall of Famers, Craig Guy Lafleur and Larry Robinson. Welcome to the podcast. That's a pretty good start there, right? Lafleur and Robinson, Hall of Famers. And I'm getting to my question about the future Hall of Famer, Alexander Ovechkin, 848 career goals, 46 away from matching Wayne Gretzky, and really different players from when you were in Montreal. Robinson, by the way, was listed, Craig, at 6'4", 225. Ovechkin is 6'3", but at least 240 pounds. He averages like 200 hits per year. Lafleur was listed at 6 feet, 185 pounds. He had 560 goals, which ranks 28th all time. They both won 5 Stanley Cups. Ovechkin won his cup in 2018. He led the league with 18 goals in the playoffs that year, 11 on the power play. So, Craig, what's it been like following Ovechkin's career and his resurgence this year with the playoffs on the line?
It's been amazing, Mark. You know, I've been fortunate enough to be in the booth for all his seasons, starting in his rookie year. And to me, what blew me away was the confidence he had. And I'd go right back to the first game against Columbus, where he scores, where he absolutely demolishes a defenseman behind the net. Sushi. I called him Sushi. His name's Sushi. And we had fun with that. And he absolutely demolished him. And I said, oh, my God, this guy is a runaway train. And it's first several years, you know, all the goals, all the hits. Yes. And now he's matured. You know, he became the captain here in Washington. He had a family. He got married. So we've seen his transition from this young, wide open, wide-eyed guy to now this cerebral captain that has now caught fire during his favorite time of the year. And he will say that this is his favorite because he always wants to be in the playoffs. He wants to, this time of the season to be counting the type of games they're playing, just not playing for not for the summertime, playing for something. And he has risen his game to totally different than what it was, Mark, at the start of the season. At the start of the season, 8 goals, his first 43 games, wasn't skating, wasn't moving, wasn't adjusting, for example, on one-timer shots from Carlson or whoever was playing the point on the power play. Now he's lighter, and he's been able to skate and get involved, and they've worked with him on those things. Yeah, he's been great, and one of the reasons we're in the hunt here.
Greg, a quick sidebar on the subject of bigger and stronger players. We ran a story today here at DetroitNews.com on a 6'8 goalie from here in Michigan, Alpena, Michigan. His name is Cooper Black. He signed a 2-year deal with the Panthers yesterday. He played in the ECAC with Dartmouth, a 9-10 save percentage, and a finalist for the Ken Dryden Goalie of the Year Award, the ECAC. You're familiar with that division. You played 4 years at Clarkson, scored 65 goals, and you had your number 22 retired. No big deal, as Paul Bissonnette would say. But Dryden was listed, by the way, Dryden was listed at 6'4", 205. Cooper is 240 pounds. Dryden had just retired before you scored your first NHL goal. He was only 31, 6 cups in 7 years. But what about this evolution, Craig, of goaltending? When you're 6'1", like Trey Augustine of Michigan State, a Red Wings draft pick, and you're considered small by NHL standards, how times have changed, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my first goal was scored on Pat Riggin, who became my teammate here in Washington for many years. And I remember even talking to Greg Millen and guys that I run into along the road trips that I take with the Caps. I mean, they were 5'8", 5'9". Grant Fuhr was maybe 5'10 at the most.
Sure.
Even Marty Brodeur wasn't a huge goalie. Yeah, there's been a huge evolution, but I'll give you an adage that I've always used, whether it be in youth hockey or in pros. You'd rather have a big, bad goalie than a small, bad goalie. And it comes down to that.
Absolutely.
That at the end of the day, these goalies are so athletic. The size is a factor now. They take up the majority of the net, and they're teaching the smaller the goalie, they now teach goalies how to take up more of the net. Even here in town with Charlie Lindgren, they've worked on his positioning to make him look bigger in the net. Okay. And now you've got a 6'8", 6'9" guy. It's just about the technique that he has, and that, I'm all for the big goalies. But I don't want to see 6'8" throughout the NHL. I want to give the shooters some opportunity.
Now, how about this playoff race, Craig? The Wings and Capitals are tied with 82 points for the second wild card spot, but the Capitals are percentage points ahead of the Wings. They played one less game. Our beat reporter, I was saying on our podcast, Ted Kolff, and he says it's been a rather underwhelming race at times. He calls it like a pillow fight. He's probably right there. The Capitals last night, you were in Buffalo, and the Capitals lost 6-2, 3 straight losses after 3 straight wins. The Wings went 7 games without a win and then 4 games without a win before sweeping the Lightning on Monday. How about how you see this race unfolding?
Well, the teams are ramping up, and I thought it was going to be a 2 or 3 team race, and now with us losing to Buffalo and obviously the Islanders squeaking out a win, and Pittsburgh doesn't go away, they're 3 points back, so it's sort of like a 5-team race here. There's some going for the Metropolitan. We're trying to chase down Philadelphia, sure, obviously, yeah, and we've got a big game coming up. The last game of the season against the Flyers, they may have implications on the whole playoff race overall, including the Red Wings. We have the Red Wings next week. We are just loaded with games that can turn your season around for the good or for the bad. And last night's loss for the Caps really stung. They've lost now, I think, 23 or 24 games, Mark, where we've been 3 goals or more. So we either get blown out, or we play tight games. In the tight games, this Caps team is very good. Last night, they were not. The third period was awful. And now, all of a sudden, you've got 5 teams vying for, I think, 2 spots. I think Tampa's going to get in. Mm-hmm. So now we've got a wild card that Detroit, Caps, Islanders, Flyers, and now we're also going, and Pittsburgh. I'm including Pittsburgh in this bunch because they're 3 points back. And we play them on Thursday night, tomorrow night. So it's a big swing game for us. And, you know, everyone looks at games in hand. So games in hand, you know, I look at them. Yeah, you feel better, but you still got to go out there and perform and win. So we've still got games in hand, but we've got a tough schedule. We've got back-to-backs coming up this week. We have Pittsburgh at home, which is always a rival. It doesn't matter where you are in the standings. Pittsburgh and the Caps are one of the best rivalries in the NHL. Sid versus Ovi is always going to be intriguing. So now we have that, and then we go right to Carolina, come home, and now we play the surging Ottawa Senators Sunday afternoon at 6 o'clock. So our schedule is tight. Then we go to Detroit. Then we come home, and we have the Flyers. It just goes on and on. So if the Caps don't take care of their games in hand, it's going to go down to the wire. And I think the way the Wings have played the Caps, you see, what happens is the Caps are not good playing against teams that have a lot of speed and a lot of skill. Case in point, the last time we visited Detroit and Detroit put the hammer down on us, I think it was 8-3 at the time, they, I thought, were the best team passing and speed-wise I had seen a season. Then they come into Washington and we get squeaked by them. So I think in Detroit, it's going to be a different scenario. The Caps are going to have to play the right game. And the right game for the Caps is to play a low event game. And if we play a high event game against your guys like Larkin and company, all these guys that can skate and shoot, we're going to be in deep, deep trouble.
Greg, you mentioned that game Thursday, February 27th. Not only did the Wings win 8-3, but that put them at 13 games over 500, the high water mark for not only this season, but in Steve Yzerman's 5 seasons. And you're right, after the game, Spencer Carberry said, quote, "They are as good as any team in the National Hockey League." But you know what, Craig? After the game, too, Steve Yzerman said he saw some bad habits creeping into their game. And sure enough, they lost to the Islanders, then Dylan Larkin got hurt against Florida, and then, of course, that game in Washington. And I want to ask you about something that happened after the game when coach Derek Lalonde blamed Andrew Kopp for letting his man go on the faceoff. Lalonde said, what was he thinking? He said it was a rookie mistake. And he said, you learn not to lose your sentiment on the play, Dylan Strom. You learned that 15 years ago, and that's a mistake that shouldn't be made 15 years from now. So what was it like when you played, when someone got called out publicly by the coach? It can backfire. Sometimes it works. Kopp has been -4 in those 3 games since being called out. But arguably, Greg, the success of that Wings checking line with 6'6 Michael Rasmussen and 6'2 Christian Fisher, that's the reason they're even in this playoff race. So what did you make of something like that? Is it much ado about nothing?
I don't think it's a much about nothing. I really think that players in this day and age, number one, when I played, there was no social media. I mean, the coach, you knew when you made a mistake because you didn't play. It was as simple as that. You made a mistake, you sat at the end of the bench. And that's just the way it was with the coaches I had. So I knew you as a player know when you make a mistake. I think Andrew Kopp knows. He's been around the block. He knows that that was a mistake. But you know what? mistakes happen in games. Unfortunately for Alon and his team, it cost him the game. But at the end of the day, he's still going to go about his business. I don't think it's going to affect him at all. I think they're a very diligent third line that does a great job checking and shutting down teams. I just think that that's one off. And I think he was also probably upset because if you look at that game closely that we won, Detroit could arguably have beat us in regulation and had the chance to beat us for sure. So at the end of the day, it's one little mistake, but I think he's going to be fine. And I'm not sure it even bothers players in this day and age, to be honest with you.
Craig, thanks again for your time so far. Just a couple of more questions. How about the play of Charlie Lindgren, the goalie who led the league in March with 9 wins? In that Detroit loss last week, that second period, Detroit had 20 shots on goal, goals by Alex DeBrincat, and then David Perron on the power play after a couple of highlight reel saves.
Yeah.
And really, for a team with a minus 35 goal differential, the largest goal differential for any playoff team since expansion, if it weren't for Lindgren and these low-scoring games that you talked about when the team really clamps down, where would the Caps be?
We'd be in deep, deep trouble. I think when you look at Charlie Lindgren, he's been a game saver. I think when you look at the goal differential at minus 35, a lot of that has to do, like we talked earlier, is that the Capitals win tight and the Capitals lose in blowout fashion. And therefore, the goals against are way
sure,
up.
Okay. Yep.
And a lot of the times that we allow 6 goals, I think we've allowed 6 or more goals 11 times. The last time that happened, just to put it in perspective, was, I think, Ovechkin's rookie year. So that tells you sort of, you get blown out like that, then your goal differential is never going to catch up. So let's get to Charlie Lindgren. Charlie Lindgren came in, wanted the opportunity in Washington. They signed him definitely as a backup because we had signed Kemper, the Stanley Cup champion, to a 5-year, $25 or $30 million deal. And he was going to play 60, and Charlie was going to play 20 to 25. And that was sort of going to be what the Caps were going to run with. Well, you look at Kemper's numbers, Charlie then took the opportunity. And Carberry, being a first-year coach, is all about opportunity. Is a player going to take advantage of an opportunity given to him and run with it? Well, Charlie has. The reason Charlie is very good this time of year is he's athletic. He's got very good agility. He's got very good quickness. And you know, watching a lot of hockey, that the game's really about moving pucks laterally. And the Detroit Red Wings, one of the best for moving one side of the circle to the other, lateral passes to score goals. Charlie's able to recover. Kemper's sort of an old school, square up, one push, try to get across, where Charlie's more acrobatic. Sometimes he doesn't look the best when he's diving around and doing the splits and all these things that we don't see now in this day and age from goaltenders. And he's stopping saves above expected. He's supposed to, it's the adage in goaltending, right? Stop the ones you're supposed to and litter in there and filter in 2 or 3 that you're not. Mm-hmm. Well, he's doing that every game. And he's had 10 straight appearances. I would imagine he's going to probably play here against Pittsburgh tomorrow night, which will be 11 straight. This is his career year, to be honest with you, Mark. We did not expect this coming from him, a 20-plus winner. No way. We thought he was going to be a 500 goalie. Kemper was going to carry the mail. So now we've got sort of, I guess you would say, a little bit of a dilemma.
Sure.
But Charlie stepped up to be the number one guy, and he is the major reason that Caps have a chance to get into the playoffs. Without Charlie, I'm not sure this would be coming to fruition at the end of the season.
And finally, Craig, these last 2 weeks of the season, we talked a bit about how you'll be in Detroit next Tuesday, but first, Tom Wilson will be back from his suspension for tomorrow night's showdown against the Penguins. They're just 3 points back, as we were saying, behind the Caps and Wings. The Caps will probably need to get Max Pacioretty going. He played 1 year here at Michigan. He's gone 16 games without a goal. His last goal was actually here in Detroit. And last night, he took a costly holding penalty against Rasmus Dahlin early in the third period, down 3-2. Dahlin scored on the power play and the game was over. So, Craig, what has to go right in these next few games? You talked about the schedule, 5 games in 7 nights. Everyone's playing a lot of games, the Penguins, Carolina, Ottawa, and then finally here in Detroit next week.
Yeah, a lot of things have to go well. When you look at the games remaining, you have to think the Caps need at least five wins to really get in. I think it's going to be 93 points to get in.
Okay.
If we win 5, we're going to be at 92 and we're going to be right on the cusp. But I really believe the Detroit game and the Philadelphia game, of the remaining games the Capitals have, could be decisive one way or the other. So I think the Caps are going to prepare that way. But like Carberry says, Carberry's been very good at putting compartments together. And the compartment is making sure they focus on one game. He's already put last night's game behind him. They're focusing on the Pittsburgh Penguins, not worrying about back-to-back against Carolina. And if the Caps play the right way, and the right way for the Caps, as I told you earlier, Mark, is playing a very tight, low event, low scoring, waiting for a chance on the power play with Ovi and company, because the power play, you mentioned Lindgren,
yeah.
Another reason why this Caps team is in the playoff hunt is because of their power play. I think it's been one of the best power plays since January 1 in the NHL. They are now moving around. I think the coaching staff has done a great job. Kirk Muller runs the power play, and he had to break them out of a lot of habits that they've had over the years. They're moving more. They're more on the puck. They're moving and making plays, using their internal skill to make plays that maybe they were too static before. So the combination of Lindgren and the power play, I think, will be the key factors if the Caps are going to make the playoffs or not.
Greg, thanks again for your time today coming on our podcast and talking about a little bit about your early days in the NHL. And of course, talking about this playoff race with the Capitals and Wings and Flyers and Islanders and Penguins. All the best to you and Joe Beninati on your broadcast. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Great show.
Our thanks again to Craig Laughlin. Now, as mentioned, let's talk about Alex Lyon, who broke his 10-game losing streak on Monday with that 4-2 win in Tampa. 10 games without a win after winning 4 games in a row. And I said last podcast, I would have played James Reimer on that Saturday afternoon in Nashville. Lions' losing streak was at 8 games. And Reimer had just saved the season with a 4-3 win over Columbus and a 6-3 win over the Islanders. Now, probably nobody would have beaten that Predators team, a buzzsaw of a team at that time, 16 games, an unbeaten streak. But now, Ted, it's clearly Lions' job to lose. And last year down the stretch with Florida, he went 6-1-1 with a .943 save percentage and a 1.87 goals against average. If he goes 6-1 again, the Wings will have 94 points. If he goes 5-2, if he starts all the games, they'll have 92 points, the same amount of points it took to get into the playoffs last year. So no pressure on Alex Lyon, right?
Oh, he's played. I think he showed last year he was very capable of doing it. And You're right, Mark. If he plays like that, obviously that's going to be a big plus. He's played, like we mentioned earlier, he played well in Florida and Tampa. I thought he played very well. Maybe he can get on that type of role. I mean, he came out with some really big saves late in both those games. He's shown he can get on a hot streak earlier in the season. He's won this job, essentially. It's his, and you're right, it's his job to lose. I mean, we're going to see a lot of Alex Lyon here these last 2 weeks, I would assume, as long as he's healthy. So it'll be interesting. I mean, he basically got the Florida Panthers into the playoffs last year. So we'll see what he can do this time around.
And finally, Ted, talking about the final 2 weeks of the season, let's look at the schedule quickly. A 3-game homestand starting Friday against the Rangers, and then that Sunday afternoon game against the Sabres, and then the showdown, the latest, biggest game against the Capitals. So 3 games there. And then on Thursday next week, they're in Pittsburgh and then in Toronto on Saturday. So 2 road games. And then they wrap up the season against the Canadiens at home here on the 15th of Monday. And then on the 16th against the Canadiens. So an overview, Ted, like, what do you think might happen there? 6-1 would be great. 5-2. Who knows? Maybe you get in with a lot less of a record considering this race. What do you make of these final 7 games?
I don't think they don't necessarily have to go 6-1, Mark. Like we said, I don't think if they can, great, that they pretty much clinch it for sure. But just let's face it, up to this point, we haven't seen any of those teams capable of a sustained run. It's not going to take a heck of a whole lot. And as I'm sitting here right now, I really don't think it's going to take a heck of a lot. I think they can win most of those games, Mark, can't you? I mean, yeah. I think they can win. I mean, not to say they will, because they haven't shown any much consistency either, but I think they can win most of them, so that should be good enough. But I would keep an eye below on the Islanders and the Penguins. I really have this hunch that one or both of them can get on a little bit of a roll here. Mm-hmm. I don't have much faith in Philadelphia and Washington. How about you?
Philadelphia and Washington, Ted, I think it's a five-team race, just like you said. Those two teams, the Islanders and the Penguins and the Red Wings, five teams, only two will make it. Three teams will be lamenting these final games of the season and how they let things get through their grasp.
Are you a believer in Philadelphia and Washington, Mark, or not?
The Flyers, after the other night when John Tortorella said he doesn't think the team has what it takes to sort of get across the finish line, they've overachieved all season, right? So maybe they might be the team that doesn't make it. The Capitals, as soon as you say they're not going to make it, then all of a sudden, Charlie Lindgren, he won the most games in March with 9 victories. They looked terrible last night. TJ Oshie wasn't in the lineup. Tom Wilson comes back.
That might give them a little bit of a spark, but yeah, they just seem so banged up. Boy, when they're bad, Mark, they're bad.
Really bad, yes.
You just don't have much faith in them.
And Washington, Ted, they have a minus 35 goals differential. No team since the expansion era has had a record that bad. Minus 24 was the worst since 1967. And the Capitals are minus 35. So you can make the argument they have no business being in the race. But they're back in with Alex Ovechkin. And you never know. It could come down again. Well, we keep saying this, but next Tuesday – that Capitals game, another showdown.
I'm eyeing that Thursday Red Wings Penguins game. I think that one might be more.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. Next Thursday, April the 11th.
I think that might, by that time, Pittsburgh might be settled into a really good position. That might be the latest. That might be the biggest game. And then you get home again. And then you're off in Toronto Saturday.
Yeah. No. Ted, what a finish. What a finish, eh?
It will be interesting. And, I'm sure fans will be excited. So, and you know, that's going to be a fun time here, a very fun time.
Ted, thanks again for your time today. You can find all of Ted's stories online at DetroitNews.com, as well as on our Octopulse Facebook page. That'll do it for episode 101 of our Detroit News, Detroit Red Wings podcast. Thanks again, everyone, for listening, rating, and reviewing our podcast.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.